Hey, everyone. Did you know, according to the sacred text bound in human flesh known as the Necronomicon, that our Dark Lord Cthulhu rests in his sunken city of Rillia on a giant pile of money? Well, if you don't want to see the world devolve into a black abyss of gibbery madness, or you just want to support our show, go ahead and head over to Patreon.
You can find that at patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast, or head over to alientheoristtheorizing.live, where you can suppress the Dark Lord by buying our merch. Or really stick it to him by leaving us a 5-star review and subscribing.
Thanks a lot. And Fiknui Mlknafa Cthulhu Rillia Wagnagel Fatagan.
Wagnagel Fatagan to you too, Dan.
In May of 1967, Stefan Michalak was out hunting for quartz when a group of geese had seemingly been spooked by two glowing cigar-shaped objects. Michalak's encounter at Falcon Lake would go on to produce one of Canada's most well-known UFO encounters. A little less than a decade later, and about 100 miles west, over the skies of the town of Carmen, another incredible phenomenon took place. Beginning in early 1975, town residents began observing a strange object crossing their skies with alarming regularity. The object appeared so frequently that those who watched the skies, trying to catch a glimpse of the object, allegedly began to ascribe human characteristics to the object and even gave it a proper name. According to author Grant Cameron, the phenomenon would produce incredible sightings and encounters for nearly 2 years and coincide with some of the most tense years of the Cold War. This case file joined the theorists as they keep their eyes on the Manitoba skies in search of Charlie Red Star.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 154, Charlie Red Star. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
So what's going on over there?
The best fucking part about that is right before we started recording, Braden did nothing but complain about his new haircut. And then when the stream started, it was just zoomed in on your new shitty haircut. And it was fantastic.
How come I can't see?
I don't know, but
stream?
It was gold. It's the best.
Oh,
you couldn't
man.
Have planned it any better.
Yeah, I got a hack job. It happens though.
But it's a high and tight. If this was fucking like 1993, that'd be it. You'd be the guy.
I look like I'm getting ready to go to to be an extra on House Party.
Buddy, you're probably wearing hammer pants right now. Nobody can see them if you stand up.
So we've been opening this show with a little bit of questions. So I got a question for you guys. Do you guys think it's weird that we personify or like give human traits to, you know, some of these cryptids and UFOs and stuff, you know, like Bigfoot, for example, there's a movie, Harry and the Hendersons. You know, we kind of do this. We give these human traits to these non-human things. What do you guys think about that? Is that normal? Is that just a character? Why do we do that?
I think it's pretty obvious. You gotta sell merch. How else are you gonna do it? You gotta have a cool fucking character name.
That's true. I like it.
I think you're just humans are trying to all these personifications some are usually a little making it not so evil.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe you see this fucking monster in the woods, you're like, it's a terrifying monster, but no, it's a cuddly Bigfoot, like Harry.
I don't know if everybody knows this, but Zell's real name is Nosferatu, but we give him name Zell.
Zell Fratu.
We give him that just to personify him a bit, you know.
We put him in the pineapple shirt to make him, you know, more appealing.
Less formidable, you know, he's just...
Yeah, a little color.
Yeah.
What do you think, Dan?
I think it's something that's been going on for... you know, time immemorial, where you try to put a face on the things that you don't understand. And then in some way you're either able to relate or feel like you understand that phenomenon. So, you know, giving these creatures, I think it's very you know, it's a very good chance of what Zell said is pretty spot on, where you kind of give these creatures or phenomenon names or personalities, and it kind of makes them less scary. Then I also mean, I think Andrew's also right too, where it's like, yeah, gotta sell that Bigfoot tees, like, gotta sell those monster chucks, man. Like
some situations, yeah, for sure.
Gotta make some money, man.
What do you think, Brayden?
It's interesting because I was thinking about it to, like, even with the stars, right? When you go you know, get your star map app and you look at the constellations and then you see the pictures of what they're supposed to be. And you're like, that doesn't look like that at all. It's just like five stars. They're drawing a picture around it and they've given it these characteristics of something that we know and can understand. And then, you know, they've given stories and legends around all these things. I bring that up because today's case file has a lot of those, you know, the personification, maybe to an extreme that I hadn't seemed to, and an extreme to like an like extremely inanimate object. The story of Charlie Redstar is a very fascinating one, and most of the information, all of the information that you get about this, is from a book called Charlie Redstar by Grant Cameron. And this is an interesting one because this is about a UFO flap that started in 1975 for 2 years, and at the time, Grant Cameron, he made notes of all these sightings that were happening around Manitoba, and he went and interviewed all the people at the time.
Okay, so before we get too far into this, I think you need to break something down for the dummies like me, and I've been waiting at my own expense because I know I'm going to get made fun of it. What the fuck is a UFO flap? What the fuck
you
is
don't
that?
Know?
Why is it flap? What do you mean?
You what don't know that? What a flap is?
No.
You know what? I'm not even going to tell you.
Well, I know, like, you take off your shirt, you could show us some flaps, but I mean, like...
I know what it is.
What
I know
is
what
it?
Is, and I know what Zell, and I know Dan knows what it is, but I'm not going to tell you because fuck I think that's a journey of self-discovery is much more fulfilling.
Listen, what the fuck is a flap, okay? I've been coming dude, around to this alien shit. I've been doing better.
I have
better.
No idea.
I don't know what a flap... You don't know?
I think it's...
You're talking like you fucking know.
I have no idea.
Making me feel like I'm alone sitting here like an asshole, not knowing what a fucking flap is.
I think it's when there's like just lots of reoccurring, I think.
Would a flap? Do flaps reoccur? Maybe, like, I don't understand. Unfortunately, when they do occur, it's terrible. I don't like it, but...
Dan, do you know this one? Are we all in the dark on this one? Why they call it a flap?
I know we talked about it when we talked about the DC UFO flap. And it's mostly, I mean, we tried to look it up, but it's mainly, yeah, it's just like a string of occurrences that happen.
Is it like an acronym? Like, what does flap stand
for?
No,
it's just...
It means like a string of occurrences, but I think it comes from like people get really excited about something. I think in the dictionary, I remember looking it up last time.
Just ready to fucking flap off over all these aliens. It's awesome.
A state of excitement or agitation. That's what we came up with. Like a tizzy or an uproar. I remember talking about last time. So like,
you like all right. Flap your arms.
Or you get excited.
Yeah.
Like a little kid running around super excited, flapping his arms.
So Grant Cameron, he goes and he interviews all these people during this time. And he puts a manuscript together of a book. And after the flap's over, sometime in 1977, he tries to get the book published, gets nowhere with it. Everyone's like, it's not, you know, it's kind of frowned upon, the topic. No one really wants to help with the book. So he gives it to his sister and is like, I don't care. Like, put it with memorabilia, whatever. I don't give a shit. And then he forgets about it. 30 years later, his sister, digging through the old memorabilia boxes, finds this manuscript, contacts Grant Cameron and says, you have this manuscript still here. Like, you should do something with it. Grant Cameron goes, you know what? Maybe I'll pursue this again. And he gets it published. And this is basically where we get all the information about this UFO flap. So that's a little backstory about the book. Interesting book, interesting read. Dan, why don't you take away? Why are we talking about Charlie Redstar? What the fuck is Charlie? What is a Charlie Redstar?
So like we said before, the book and these occurrences all happened over a span of about 2 years. They started like early 1975 around February. By May, like it was kind of all in the news. And all across
all across Manitoba.
Front page news.
Media had been reporting on it. And when I say media, mostly it's probably like the local media. And from in terms of national coverage, you probably have like the Inquirer, and it popped up on a few like Unsolved Mysteries, not Unsolved Mysteries, a show, but a couple, you know, alien mysteries TV shows. Some footage popped up, which we'll talk about later. What people mostly reported to see was what they identified as some sort of kind of red pulsing object that would fly quite low around and over the town of Carmen in Manitoba, which is a little about 50 miles from Winnipeg, like 50 miles west. I'm thinking
close to Winnipeg.
So you have this object which just always seemed to appear at usually kind of the same time, same places. Sometimes its manner would change about where exactly it was going, but people had no idea what this thing was, and it became almost a pastime within that town.
Well, hold on. The reason it became a pastime is because I've been to Manitoba. And listen, no offense to anyone who lives in southern Manitoba, but not a lot going on in southern Manitoba. So this would have definitely made the
it's the highlight. It's so flat that you have so much sky, you'd see everything. You'd be looking every
big
night.
Sky.
You could see from horizon to horizon,
and that makes a lot of sense because, like I said, people became almost like fanatical about chasing what they termed and what they ended up naming Charlie Red Star, this red object that would fly through the sky at what seemed to be anywhere between 100 to 1,000 feet in the air, and people would get in their cars and they would chase it for miles going after it.
And it was so consistent in some space, like some places.
That's what's super weird to me about this is the fact, like, I can't even count how many fucking UFO stories we've covered, but I don't think we've ever talked about one that's like
consistent
has
like that.
Regular fucking activity, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so much so that people, it's like to clockwork, people are like, oh, we know Charlie's coming around today, so we're just gonna fucking grab a sixer and hang out and watch Charlie.
Yeah, when's, what do you guys want to do tonight? When's the last time you went and chased Charlie? You guys want to go chase Charlie?
It was a pastime.
That's fucking crazy though. Like, I've never
it
heard
was
that
it like, was though like they it was such an occurrence that these people would, you know, there was fanatics like Grant Cameron who was like, this is crazy. I'm out here every night. And then you have people that be like, I'm not that into it. Or they get midnight. They'd be like, I want McDonald's. I've had enough. I don't want to wait for Charlie anymore. And they'd go.
What other stories do we know of? Like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody says, like, if you go out hunting a UFO, you're not going to find shit. You have to, the UFOs find you.
No, if you go with Dr. Greer, he guarantees he'll show you UFOs.
Yeah, you only got to pay fucking $6,000.
You got to sign an NDA though.
Smoke some fucking fancy shit.
You gotta pay your entrance fee.
you're definitely guaranteed to see UFOs, but you can't tell anybody.
You can't record it. You can't tell anybody.
The other weird thing with this one right away is, that struck me as weird as soon as I started looking into it, is that by all accounts, is that Charlie Red Star, this glowing red orb, is described as friendly or mischievous. And I don't know if that's after listening to a lot of these things, I don't know if that those are the two terms that I would
more like
attribute to him. Terrifying.
Something like War of the Worlds.
I would probably agree with you because some of the first sightings that occurred that concerned what would be the object were something that would happen at the people's houses, and they would hear this noise. There was a certain noise that was attributed to or associated with Charlie Red Star when it was flying low enough that people could actually hear it. I know they reported hearing a high pitched drone sounding kind of like a siren, somewhere between halfway between a siren and a jet engine is what people reported hearing. Sometimes it would be for an extended period, and then other people said that you would hear this sound as it was taking off. Like there were a couple reported sightings of it actually landing, in a couple fields or on the side of the road, and then people would approach it. You'd hear that sound of it taking off, and then they would go
and
silent.
And you just burst into giggle and laughter because you were having so much fun. But,
yeah, there's Charlie! There, Charlie.
Isn't that the Canadian way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, like, here he goes again.
You gotta be nice. He's just, you know, he's misunderstood. Good old Charlie.
That fella up there, he's just Charlie.
He's not harming anybody. Even if he does, it was probably an accident.
It's old Charlie just going for another beer run there, eh?
Yeah.
Hey, take off, eh? Dude, that's my favorite part, is that Charlie would take such a course that, you know, they basically knew where he would go, and he would ping pong across this guy, described as ping ponging his way, that the locals all said, it's just Charlie on his beer run. That is hilarious.
And Charlie's beer run apparently was international, because people reported seeing this object traveling along and over the U.S. border. And so you'd have the town of Walhalla, North Dakota. And then it would say that when they reported, when Charlie would go across the border, he would drop altitude until about Roland, Manitoba. And then they would say that he's not, like I said, most people estimated it being like, but not more than 1,000 feet off the ground.
How much you want to bet he crosses the border and suddenly goes from being lovable fucking Charlie Red Star to being Charlie the Dread Star and getting dodging bullets, fucking yeah. People panicking. Yeah. And
oh, we knew Charlie by a different name down here. Old Charlie Dreadstar.
Charlie Dreadstar.
So this is 1975, right? This is when these encounters. Isn't that the same? Like, this is pretty important time for UFOs, right? Because like, this is the same time that, wasn't it, Travis Walton had his little fucking encounter too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the 60s, 70s, pretty much the whole atomic age.
This is the peak
of UFO sightings.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Cold Wars and shifting into high gear. A lot of international tension going around the world. Nuclear proliferation is happening. And so, you know, there's people who draw that connection that perhaps this has something to do with that. We can get into that
a little bit later.
This UFO flap made such a impact that even Dr. Alan Hynek, who, you know, famous for working on Project Grudge, Project Sign, Project Blue Book, actually had, you know, something to say about it, you know, talking about how you have this almost like it seems to be like an area that these UFOs frequented. And he said, quote, "We have had for the past 6 weeks a fair amount of activity in southern Manitoba in an area about 55 miles south of Winnipeg. We've had some very interesting sightings from there. The pattern has been in the past that an area can remain UFO hot for several weeks and then things die down. This thing is unusual, and then it has lasted so long," because at this point it had been he was making this statement where Charlie had been appearing for almost like 3 to 4 months. And he went to go on and say that it's beginning to look as if northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, and southern Manitoba form one large area.
So a whole international. So
it's got a big, like Charlie, you know, Red Star is cruising a huge area of land.
On a regular, like on a routine almost, it seems like.
Well, we know why he's fucking coming to Canada. Let's be honest. It's the fucking crap beer in the States. He's like, listen, this isn't going to get me going.
Well, especially back then, they didn't have much selection.
No, he's coming to Canada to fucking do it right.
I mean, this report is also, it's like you didn't just have civilians making these reports. You had RCMP officers taking down reports. Corporal Glenn Toes of the RCMP, who is an officer in Carmen, remarked saying that, "I received 5 reports out of 7 nights last week at 1 week, and a lot casually mention it to you without filing a report." So the people wouldn't file reports, but they would mention, they'd report this thing, and kind of like, do you want to go on paper reporting this? Of course, the person says, no, it's just something weird. You know, he said that there are a considerable number of reports and people who are seeing, you know, these are pretty reliable people. And, you know, that's his words. These people that are reporting seeing something, or all these people, is just, these aren't the kind of people to just make up stories. you know, it sounds like I've never been to Southern Manitoba, but I mean, I imagine that it might be boring out there, but not boring enough to bug the RCMP with a bunch of stories about a bouncing red ping pong ball flying through your backyard.
And when you live down there, the winters are so bad. It makes like the people are a little, I would say a little stronger will. And they're not just going to,
they're hard,
hardy people,
hardy
people down there.
Dude. So just to give an update on Carmen, currently the population of Carmen is about 3,000 people. That's today.
That's like 1,000 more than 1975.
Right. So it's like,
that's crazy.
That's what I'm saying is like, that's small town. That's small town, rural Canada.
You had to roll it.
Yeah, nice roll.
You like that? You like that?
And did.
I would say that still kind of sells the story even more because you have these RCMP officers who obviously everybody knows everybody.
Yep.
You know, you would know who the troublemakers are. You would know.
Oh, yeah.
There'd be like, you know, three or four cops in the whole city.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure like they're hearing these stories and like, this is weird. Like these aren't the crazies. Like these aren't the people who would just come out for attention or whatever. These are reliable, hardworking people. So what's going on? Something is happening.
Oh no. Bob and Lane would never be lying.
one of the people who's central to this kind of this narrative of Charlie Red Star is a man known as Anthony Britton.
I know that name. That's, he's a local hero.
Yeah,
he is indeed. Right. He's a local hero there in Carmen. Yeah. Known for what exactly?
Oh, he's just a local legend, local hero.
You talk to any person down there in Southern Manitoba, and they're gonna know him.
Anyone in Canada, and they know who Anthony. What's his last name again?
Britton.
They know exactly who Anthony Britton is from Carmen, Manitoba.
You don't even have to say Britton, though. You just have to say
local hero.
Local hero Anthony. Britton. That's all you got to say.
Yeah. We go by, we call him Tony. That's what we call him in Canada.
Tony, what's his last name?
Britton. Doesn't matter.
Britton. Tony B.
That's where I got confused.
Yeah.
Legend.
To his close friends, Tony B.
It's my favorite part because in everything he's described as a local hero. But then it never just, I'm like, why is he a hero?
Well, it might have to do with his hobby, which was restoring rare World War II planes, very rare.
Or it might have to do with the fact planes. That he won the 1969 pie eating contest there at the county fair. It's a big deal.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I think it's true.
It sounds like probably something not far that may off, be true. But he did, he had a fascinating hobby of restoring these antique planes. He was known to have one of the few people to have fully restored a Japanese Zero to flyable condition. He'd also known for the Hawker Hurricane was one of the another ones that he restored. So Anthony Britton and his wife were kind of seen as almost Charlie Red Star kind of experts because they had a couple of spots which they identified that where Charlie was frequent to appear. They would take people out to these viewing spot, and pretty much like 8 out of 10 times you would end up seeing what they would say is Charlie Red Star. You'd sight something.
So Charlie out for a beer run. Simple as that.
Yeah, you'd see the Charlie beer run.
Nothing to be concerned about here. Move along.
And we're going to get into some of the cases and the reasons why and some of the cases of Charlie. But let's first have a quick beer break. Make sure to come back. We got a lot of interesting stuff we got to go through.
Hey, everyone. Did you know, according to the sacred text bound in human flesh known as the Necronomicon, that our Dark Lord Cthulhu rests in his sunken city of Rillia on a giant pile of money? Well, if you don't want to see the world devolve into a black abyss of gibbering madness, or you just want to support our show, go ahead and head over to Patreon.
You can find that at patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast or head over to alientheoristtheorizing.live where you can suppress the Dark Lord by buying our merch or really stick it to him by leaving us a 5-star review and subscribing.
Thanks a lot. And Fiknui Mlknafa Cthulhu Rillia Wagnagel Fatagan.
Wagnagel Fatagan to you too, Dan.
Okay, so we left off. We're just about... So we know who Charlie Red Star is. Now we're going to go through some of the accounts that are brought to you in the book, Charlie Red Star. So I guess let's start with one of the more terrifying ones. takes.
You mean friendly or mischievous?
Friendly, yeah. A friendly, mischievous red ball of light flies past on March 27th of 1975. Flies southeast of Graysville, and a young girl was awake, like awoken by a loud, I want to say happy sound, but it probably sounded more something like.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Passed her window, and it felt like the house started to shake, like almost like an earthquake there, where she seen like intense, like light flooding the house. And it looked like, in her words, in the quote from the book, is looked like the sun was coming up, but it was the middle of the night. And this UFO, the same Charlie Red Star, shook the house with, I guess, because its proximity to the house, I'm guessing.
Well, it sounds like the scene from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah, kind of.
Honestly, it sounds like that red light kind of shooting through the thing, the big sound, everything shaking.
Listen,
doesn't sound very mischievous.
You're getting it. No, you're getting it all wrong. Listen, Charlie was on his way back from a beer run, saw a good spot to have a little party, and next thing you know, boom, boom, shake the room. Just trying to have a good time here. Stop trying to make boom, it something boom, that's not, boys.
I like how it's like, at what point is that your whole house shaking? Light, blood red light described as a heartbeat pulsing that you think it's daytime,
yeah.
Followed by this loud screeching noise, and you're like, I'm having fun. I'm in danger.
Just your regular old fucking electric circus dance party. That's all that is, I'll tell you what.
That'd be fucking terrifying. Terrifying. Like, I couldn't imagine in the middle of the night, right now, if I wake up in the middle of the night, my house is shaking, and it's like, I look at my clock, and it's 3 a.m., and there's light coming in that I think is daytime, I'm not having fun. I'm just saying, I'm not having a good time. Good times are not being had.
Yeah, the red light is definitely, people who came into close proximity of Charlie Red Star, the red light is one of them. Is one of the main characteristics.
Well,
of what this
I'd
was.
Imagine, it's probably where he got his name from, right?
Yeah. You can imagine. But he is, none of this sounds particularly pleasant when people come close to contact with this thing. There's not any real reports of it injuring anybody. There's no reports of things either turning
not physically, violent. Not physically injuring anyone.
Case closed. Yeah. Friendly and mischievous. Yeah.
This girl had lifelong night terrors.
You mean lack of sense of humor? Doesn't understand the mischievousness.
Sounds like to me she had a stick up her butt.
Yeah, I concur.
Charlie didn't actually just spook humans. It wasn't just people who were scared of this thing. There were also reported reactions of animals. Like, animals would definitely get spooked. A lot of people who had encounters with this said that their dogs started going crazy. One report of a resident like running out of the house expecting, had their 22 caliber rifle out, and they were going to run outside expecting to see some strange, like, stray dog had wandered onto their property. Instead they see friendly and mischievous blood red
Charlie. You
know, Charlie. Dude, that description over their field.
Is awesome. That description is awesome, and I loved it because she's like, oh, I just ran out with a gun because I thought there was going to be some dogs attacking my cows. And when I went out, I saw Charlie over the horizon, and all my cows were standing there fixated with blood red eyes. I was like, that is not that's terrifying. Jesus. I was like, what do you mean? All your cows are fixated on the light with blood red eyes?
What's going on in first of all, what's going on in Manitoba? They have just fucking packs of wild dags running around attacking cows. That's a normal
stray
thing.
Dogs
might have been
bunch of fucking dags. Like that's your go-to.
Maybe she meant
there's wolves. A fucking cocker spaniel attacking my cow again. Jesus Christ.
I don't know what the dog situation is in Manitoba is.
I don't know, Dan. We should probably contact the Manitoba SPCA and figure it out. I'll tell you that much. Make a donation.
Can we get a stray dag report from 1975?
They're obviously
to
not
1977?
Spaying and neutering their dags out in Manitoba.
I'm sure that is easily accessible information from Stats Canada. No problem.
Get on it.
Yeah. But that, like, yeah, you know, those reports were terrifying, and those weren't the only animal reports.
So you had there was another family, another couple, the McCanns, who were actually, you know, when they had an encounter with Charlie actually spooked their herd of horses. Like they had a large herd of horses, which they kept on their property. So they had about, 200 horses. Something is what they were saying claimed by Joseph McCann.
Minus and, 32.
Well, yeah, after the fact. So when they heard that their horses at the, you know, their sighting occurred, they thought the field was on fire at first. You know, it was, they thought the red. Field.
Hilarious.
Yeah. nice guy. So they popped out there and they thought that this, that, you know, they knew about Charlie Red Star. It was kind of is in the news. It's common knowledge at this point in which they had seen it. And they had thought that it was in the field, like it had landed, because there were reports of this thing landing. People who identified it or said that they had saw it land, they said it was kind of like this half dome shape, seemed to have like windows around the side, but it was still like a glowing red object, which would take off and usually hover above the ground. There's some reports of suspected landing sites where things don't grow anymore, or these strange half or full horseshoe shaped like just dead spots.
How hard are these fucking people from Manitoba? They look outside their door and see nothing but fucking fire and brimstone. Looks like the fucking apocalypse, and they're like, oh, Charlie, he's up to it again.
Oh, you know what? If he comes back again, I'm going to grab my .22.
Throw off a couple warning shots. Let him know we're here to have fun. No biggie. No biggie, Charlie. You enjoy that beer run, okay?
Hey, take off, eh?
See you
like,
again,
unbelievable.
Pal.
Like, you come outside, you think your field's on fire. I'd be like, there's no way. Like, no, that's like, no one's having fun there. No one in that situation is having fun.
The McCanns kind of theorized for some reason that the horses ended up getting spooked and they kind of started to stampede and they later settled down, but they couldn't hear any sound from the object. So they kind of, this led them to believe that this noise or something that the object was probably making some sort of sound that was outside of audible frequency, because it was still spooking the horses and they couldn't hear anything even from 500 feet away.
So like an infrasound or something like that?
Possibly.
Perhaps. Possibly.
So that, and that was the first account that it went more, not just from a red orb. This was actually had now of more of like a classic saucer, like the shape on like the ball on top, like the dome.
Right. And so, and then after they take account of these horses, apparently 32 had gone missing.
Well, Grant Cameron didn't add that in his book, but in all interviews, he talks about, you know, the McCanns.
The McCanns are one of the fucking figureheads of his interviews. He goes off on them for fucking like 20 minutes on every single one. It's crazy.
So wait, the horses, they disappear? Like they ran away?
Yeah, they ran away, and then McCann went into the fucking local RCMP office and tried to file a report.
And the horses were never found?
It probably went something like this, is what I imagine.
Oh, hey there, officer. I'm coming here to report that I've got a couple of their, my horses are there missing.
Well, you don't say there, Mr. McCann. Tell me, what's going on here? Do you have any suspects or anybody you like for this situation?
Well, not that there's the wild thing, because now I'm thinking that because last night me and the wife, we went outside and we were seeing this kind of strange. We thought the field was on fire at first, but now when we go back and we go outside, it looks like it's one of them there, Charlie Red Stars.
Whoa, surely you don't mean Charlie Red Star. You're probably meaning Charlie McDonald from Turtleford there. He's been up to a lot of no good lately.
No, I'm pretty sure that it was Charlie Red Star
I'm going to stop you right there for a second there, Mr. McCann. McCluskey, I need you here pronto ASAP here. I need backup right now.
Go ahead, Captain McClellan. What do you need?
Well, we got a problem over here. You need to drop whatever you're doing right here. This is priority one.
Well, I've just got that murder suspect. I've got him. He's about to confess.
McCluskey,
I'm about to break him.
I fucking told you right now. Don't make me raise my voice. Priorities. Get over here. This fucker over here, Mr. McAsshole, has got something bad to say about our boy Charlie Red Star. We need to solve
this.
Hold
on. I'm going to cut this guy loose right now.
Let him
What's
go.
This about Charlie? Are you sure he doesn't mean Charlie McDonald from Turtleford?
No, I asked him already. He's talking about our boy Charlie Red Star.
This is Charlie Red Star. I go out there and that light is as red as that stoplight, that new stoplight over there in that intersection between the two new roads over there that they're building over there by the Charlie McDonald's house.
You listen here, you McPiece of shit. I'm not going to listen to here besmirching the good name of Charlie Red Star. All right, so you better buck and backtrack here.
Mr. McCann, I'll tell you right now, these are some serious goddamn allegations, eh? And you better take off, eh? If you think that you're going to come in here, you know how much this goddamn town's invested in Charlie Land? This is all we have in Manitoba. This is the best thing to ever happen to Manitoba. And you're going to come in here. You know what? Sorry, Cap. Sorry.
No, it's okay. McCluskey, it's fine because you know what? Charlie Red Star is a goddamn national hero. He's Manitoba's Mickey Mouse, for fuck's sakes. You better backtrack, my friend.
Now, I'm not saying that it probably is Charlie Red Star, but it probably is Charlie Red Star. And it sounds like right now you're trying to tell me to hold my horses, but I can't hold my fucking horses because they're all gone.
McCann, first of all, I'm not even sure you had any fucking horses. And I don't give a shit if you're my kid's fucking hockey coach. You come over here talking this shit.
Oh, you want Gavin to see that there ice time? You're going to have
don't
to tell
you
me
talk.
That.
Gavin's the best two-way player you got on that fucking team.
Boys, McCann. Let's leave the minor hockey out of this.
Oh, fuck. We got the McCullough Cup coming up next week, and this guy's bringing up fucking hockey. We're going to have a problem here.
Listen, McCann, I'm going to tell you right now, it's in your best interest to keep your goddamn mouth shut and turn around and forget about those fucking horses. You
kick
hear me?
Fucking
forget
rocks,
about the
McAsshole.
Fucking horses.
We'll see if anybody's going to forget about my damn horses when I go straight to the National Enquirer. I'll go straight to them. They've been in here investigating for the last couple months now, yeah?
Yeah, I'm sure. They'll fucking find your horses when they find Batboy.
They're
Boy,
a
no,
nationally syndicated periodical, right. I'll tell you.
Just take off, eh, McCann? This is getting too heated. God damn it.
I can't believe fucking goal on that guy bringing up Gavin. Jesus.
I know. You know what? He's got you by the short and curlies. You know, don't
listen
push
here.
His buttons.
Gavin's the best goddamn center he's got on his fucking team.
Hey,
he wants to win that McCullough Cup. He knows what he's going to do.
It's a tough year for Gavin, too, because this is the year the juniors are going to have a look at him.
He's going to get drafted. I'll tell you that right now. He's a leading scorer, for Christ's sake.
You know, he's a good kid.
Oh,
he's a good kid.
That
and I'd hate
McCann.
To see something like this ruin his chances.
And I can't say 100% that's exactly how it went, but that's pretty much how it went.
Dude, honestly, the town, McCann came forward and was like, I think Charlie Red Star abducted my horses or took the horses. And everyone in town was like, fuck this guy. Fuck the McCanns.
He became some
we
type of pariah,
them.
I guess, that just like
fucked
you know.
That entire family.
So I don't know if the town just assumed, and listen, it's small town, so like rumors and shit run rampant in small towns. Like I live in a small town of 40,000 and like shit gets around. So I can't imagine in like a town of like, 2,200 maybe back in the day? Let's say even 3,000. Let's say it has the same amount of people. Shit would fly. So maybe these are the McCanns are a type of people. I would hate, like, I don't want to sell anyone's name, but maybe the McCanns are a type of people where they're like, they're just bullshitting because they want
totally.
Attention or.
Well, what is, like, right? Were his horses insured? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Chance. Like, so many people fucking came across and talking about Charlie Red Star, like he's fucking great. And then this guy comes up and shits on the parade, ruins it, paints him to be a bad guy. You're not selling t-shirts for the asshole fucking UFO.
This is right. This is right around the time when cattle mutilations were rampant across North America. This Charlie Red Star, he took him. He took the fucking horses.
I'll get into
horses.
It in my theories after, but, you know, like I said, none of this is fun and mischievous. Like, honestly, none of it.
None of it.
None of it.
None of it.
What else we got? What other instances of Charlie terrorizing fucking people?
Well, there's another instance of people seeing it not only as a orb, but as, like, the actual craft. It was Bob and Elaine Diermert.
And they good folks.
And they are quoted as saying, as through the book, is a big red light coming at us like a big landing light. You couldn't miss it. It was right at eye level and it was just lofting along. It was close enough already that you could see the dome, but it was all red, pulsing red. So another time. So now it's pulsing red.
Pulsing red.
Pulsing red, yeah. But a dome.
Sounds like fucking Zell after a beach day. Just fucking toasty.
It sounds like Zell, the second Andrew's like, I'm having issues setting up.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, man.
No. It goes away fast. Quick rage and it's gone.
I've been on a roll.
It's been good.
I've been on a fucking roll.
It's been the best couple of months of podcasting in my life. But they pretty much describe it as about 300 feet above the treetops, about 30 miles an hour, and it lasted for about 5 to 7 minutes, just kind of floated from horizon to horizon. And
yeah, that's another thing that I also found strange about a lot of the sightings is that this object seemed to travel very slowly, right? So people would drive, like they would drive after it, even though you have a lot of sky, like you have a lot of, you know, to travel under and you could see for a very long distance. Like you could chase this thing in your car.
Yep.
Take it easy, man. Charlie fucking drinks a lot of beer. All right. He's probably got a little bit of a beer belly. Probably not most fucking athletic UFO in the league.
He's pretty lazy guy.
Yeah.
Really, you know, just really, really
he's
lazy.
Here for the beer.
Not lazy, just more like, you know, carefree.
Yeah, he's here for the beer. No big deal. Why you guys got to chase him? Stress him out.
One of the other things that seemed, there's another common thread that ran through some of the sightings where people reported seeing the main craft. So you have this main craft that people reported seeing, the red orb.
Yep.
That would sometimes, it would even split into two. Or the, like, two objects would seem to kind of split into two.
And then travel. Play tag.
Yeah, play tag was one of the phrases that people used to reference. It's you know, it's destination, whatever. It's traveling through the sky. And but one of the more dramatic sightings that they had took place at what is the Stephen Field Dam, which
this one's wild.
Yeah, which is about 3 miles west from where the object had actually been filmed by the CKY crew, and we'll show that in a little bit. Five men who had been partying. Now, so this kind of leans somewhere on the credibility, but the fact that there were five of them and they all saw the exact same thing at about 2 a.m., they saw something that they had walked over to the south side of this reservoir, and they stood out on the dock overlooking the water, I guess, as you do at 2 a.m. in southern Manitoba, something to do, I suppose.
Honestly, I imagine they weren't just standing there. What I imagine is they're probably having a fire by the reservoir. As someone who's had plenty of fires by plenty of bodies of water, I've been up plenty of times around that time. And if all of a sudden a red orb descended onto the body of water, guess what? I'd probably walk to the shoreline. If there was a dock, I would probably walk out to the dock again and be like, huh?
You'd be running the fuck out of there.
Right. And they described it as a glowing red object. And they said it was like the size of the full moon. I don't know whether it's like, you know, a full moon where it's like, yeah, super moon, or the, you know, just a tiny little dot, you know, the dot they usually see it. But this object was only what they said a couple hundred feet away from the dock that they were standing on, and it just remained motionless, just sitting over these two buoys. And between these two buoys, suddenly it shot out this
white thought you said beam. There was five buoys.
<Ba-doom. tss. laughs> in between these two buoys that it had taken its position, it shot down some sort of white beam is what they described. And this beam remained on this single point in the water for a few seconds. And then these five men described seeing a smaller white object that was somewhere between 6 to 10 feet across had formed below the spot where the beam had touched the water. So it was underneath the water.
Powering and up this was only USO?
Perhaps, right? And it's only about, they well, said they could see it clearly 100 feet from the shore.
Wait, this thing. This it shoots a beam of energy from the sky into the water.
Yes.
And then something in the water begins to either like vibrate or move and like makes a pattern on the water. Like you can see something underneath.
It began glowing white at first. And then they said that beneath the surface of the water, like it started moving slowly towards the dock on which they were standing. Now, kudos for these guys. They didn't go fucking bolting because I'm not standing on a dock. I was like, I've seen this movie before.
Grease lightning, dude.
Get out of there.
See ya.
But of course, this is 1975, so Fire in the Sky probably hasn't come out yet. So they're not officially freaked out by what's going to happen next. This luminous object, which is physically lighting up the water.
Coming towards them.
Right. Coming towards them is...
slowly, like not right. at a steady pace, but not too fast.
Well, the guy's at least a sixer deep, so he's not moving too fast.
Minimum.
They said that this glowing object became within 15 feet of the dock. And then one of the men picked up a rock and like, as I guess you would do, because this is a good idea. If there's five guys together, somebody's going to be throwing a rock.
Someone, yeah, for sure.
100%.
Yep.
So he chucks this rock at the object.
We all got that buddy. We all got that friend.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be me.
And so this object, they reported, actually physically seemed to hit the object. But when it hit the object split into four pieces.
And the rock did or the ship?
These four pieces seemed to align themselves, orienting themselves in a direct line back towards the object that was floating above the buoys. Still emitting this white beam of light. So
and they described it as like a conveyor belt, like really slowly just traveling back towards that beam of light, like in unison.
And when they reached, when these objects reached the light, or the beam, the objects and the beam disappeared.
That's the music that wasn't playing, but should have been playing while this was happening to them on the dock.
Yeah. And that's hilarious. Like that whole story, everything about that, I was like, that's the funniest story I've ever
Charlie
heard.
Red Star at it again.
What a funny UFO.
He's so mischievous there. So the objects and the beam of light disappeared. This huge red disc, they said, broke into two pieces and then flew east back towards Carmen.
Now, is this the same night that the crew from the local television station recorded the video?
I think this was a little while after that they had actually think. But we do have the video that a TV station, CKY TV.
Whoa, what? The band. CKY?
Yeah, not the band. Yeah, not the band.
What?
And that was a pain in my butt because I had to keep looking for that and I had to go through that shit and have flashbacks.
All
of
the videos.
High school.
Oh, man. What do you, that's a pain in that? That's awesome. You go down a rabbit hole for fucking couple hours. Awesome.
Okay.
So CKY TV, they had news crews out there for about 2 weeks, I believe, trying to track down, you know, get photos of whatever was going on. You know, these incredible stories that were coming out of, you know, middle of nowhere in Manitoba. And they actually managed to get some footage, which appeared on one TV show. And I think we have that pulled up.
Yeah, so I got the video up. I got the video up here.
And
but
listen, you gotta go join our Patreon because you gotta see this live stream video.
It's pretty
this
funny.
This news reporter, I thought was, I think this is Sacha Baron Cohen's first role in 1975, where he plays a small town Canadian reporter and pranks people. Oh, it sure looks like him.
It is. I'm gonna play it here. I'm not gonna play the sound, but here, let's have a little. So that's Sacha Baron Cohen from 1975. in a gray.
Wearing a wig, obviously.
Obviously.
Really does look like
Sasha looks good, man.
Yeah, he's looking great. But yeah, this video is done by the CKY crew. And oh, here, I just can't get over this guy. This is, I want to turn the sound on so bad, but I'm not, because there's music in the background.
It sounds like Sacha Baron Cohen doing a French accent.
So now here's the video that they filmed after 2 weeks of looking.
Yeah. He does that.
So we're looking at an orb. What we're looking at? We're looking at an orb, stationary orb.
Boom.
And then there's a bright flashlight and it's gone.
It splits. It looks like it splits into like, kind of like a red. I'm going to play it back here. It splits into like a red, like red orbs as it splits across. So boom, gone. You see a red flash. Like there's three orbs on the one side and then like a, looks like a bigger orb on the left, or like a flash on the left. One more time.
Yeah, they slow it down after this too.
And boom.
Boom, big flash.
It's pretty fucking weird.
It gone. It looks like that spotlight moon or that full moon we were talking about. So here's the slow motion version. Grainy as
and
hell.
Then you see this,
and then you see the orb kind of like.
I think that's the camera's speed, whatever, capturing as it moves. And it's moving so fast that it skips. Like, so it just looks like, you know, dot after dot after dot after dot moving down the screen, but very like when slowed down.
Yeah.
They didn't, low frame rate.
The frame rate couldn't handle it.
But then they capture another one of it traveling and they just same thing, just going over the tree line and it's just dot, 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 dot because it moves so fast. Whew, gone.
Yeah. And it was that video. That's the one that Hynek, that's why he pretty much, they came and investigated, because that one, that night, they were chasing Charlie Red Star. There was actually like three groups of people, all went different ways. They're like all trying to get an angle on to film it. And that's when they end up getting. But then through that, they actually ended up like testing what they thought might have been like a landing site for like, I don't know what they're trying for, like some type of radiation, like a Geiger counter or something. But in the end, it was concluded that there was no concern, because there was like no change in the amount of radiation. But that was the one that got the attention of Hynek and the project. And it's pretty cool. At least there's, you know, at least they have a video of something.
Yeah. There's evidence of here. There's not much because apparently there's another video. The author of the book mentions that there's another video, and he seems to say that it's that only 12 people have seen it, of which, from the time that he wrote the book. But that's like, you know, if he wrote that book, I don't know if that was post ever, but I don't know who else has seen it. But it really sees that most of the photos that come out of this case are all just a single point of light. You really don't get the there's no real. The descriptions are very good of people saying that they saw either this dome shaped object or this saucer shaped object that seemed to have windows on the side, or people describing it having some type of like a halo type of light on top or on bottom. People also describe seeing triangular configurations of lights underneath the object. So you have all these descriptions of things, but you don't really have any solid, you know, photographic evidence or video evidence. The only thing you really have is that one video that the CKY TV managed to capture. But in terms of pictures, I mean, there's all kinds of things where people are like, well, we couldn't get any good photos because just, you know, the technology wasn't, you know, at that point, they couldn't get the good equipment out there at that time. Just wasn't something that people were going to come out and cover. Well,
there was one lady that was able to get good pictures of it because she was taking pictures behind glass. Apparently that was the fucking trick to snapping shots of fucking
Charles.
She was using, her name was Tanis Major, and she was using this fancy technique of, I don't know where she came up with it, but yet, have we seen any of these pictures? No.
No, I couldn't find any other.
The one thing though
about
is,
the video.
The one thing I have to bring up about this though is, you know what I mean? She's the only one getting good pictures of this guy, of Charlie. I have a question for you boys. Who was the one person that got good pictures of Spider-Man?
Spider-Man.
Peter Parker. Tanis Major. Charlie Red Star.
Tanis Major is Charlie Red Star.
Case fucking closed. Wow. Done. Solved. Mongoose. Finished.
And so this she is.
Cut his camera.
So she also she's had, terrifying. She also had an overbearing boss that was asking her for more pictures of Charlie Red Star.
Yeah.
Get me more pictures of Charlie Red Star.
God damn it, Major.
A menace. He's a menace to society.
Do we have any more cases that we wanted to go through of Charles Red Star?
I think those are most of them. I think it's, you know, now you kind of get into the theories of why there were so many sightings in this area.
Right, let's get into that. Why do we think? Why do we think that in this 2-year period, there was such an interest by whatever this object was to be in that area of time between 1975 and 1977?
Yeah, why the localized interest? Like just then, just for like 6 months in that area? I mean,
Charlie Land.
I guess not. We've talked about it on Patreon before, the Falcon Lake incident from, what, like, that was in 67 or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The area is not unfamiliar with UFOs, but they seem to come in groups. So is it like, is it, you could go with like, is it a military thing? Is it like, is that, are they testing craft just for like 6 months and then they move them somewhere else? Or?
Well, Grant Cameron, you know, if his theory is that during this time in 1975 that U.S. Air Force bases in North Dakota had been stocked up with their Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles, and they had their silos everywhere. And basically, they had like 300 nuclear warheads. And he says that in 1975, if North Dakota was its own country, it would have been considered a nuclear superpower. And so we've theorized a lot of times that a lot of these UFO occurrences have, you know, were around these sites in these areas. So maybe this was a situation where Charlie Red Star was like monitoring the situation of our nuclear capabilities or the United States, and then was just drifting into Canada for some beer and maple syrup.
For the beer run, for the strong beer and that delicious...
And the clean water.
Clean water and delicious maple syrup.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it would make sense, kind of. Because how many nuclear bases are in that area? Like, is there a lot of silos, or were there a lot of silos? Do we know?
Yeah,
that?
North Dakota was
stocked full.
Big. Yeah, it was also in the later part of 1976, I'm pretty sure they began the construction on a type of the U.S. had made an agreement with the Soviet Union that they were going to both start building their own or begin the installation of these defense missile, like ground-based missile defense systems. And the main component of the U.S. one was installed in North Dakota. And you can find pictures of this one. I forget what's... it's like they had this advanced type of radar that they used or installed on the base, and it looks like a pyramid. It looks pretty cool. With the installation of this, they also installed a bunch of like smaller yield nuclear missiles that they would use. There are two types that they would use. One's for intercepting missiles that were outside the atmosphere, and then also smaller yield ones. I think there's like 10 megaton for outside and 5 megaton for inside the atmosphere to intercept Soviet missiles in the case of a nuclear assault.
A sweet name too. I just found it.
I what's the name?
So it's like stands for like Parks or Perimeter Acquisition Radar Attack Characterization System. Built in 75.
Right.
See, that's interesting because we've talked about it a lot. So maybe this is one of those things where, you know, theorized about it before, but maybe like intelligent life like ours is rare. And there is some sort of intergalactical, like non-interference treaty where these things like aren't supposed to come and, you know, kind of fuck with us, like, you know, or mess with us. But because they're monitoring the situation here on Earth and they see this heightened level of, you know, we're splitting the atom, we're making these huge devastating bombs that are going to potentially, you know, end Earth. And there's this, you know, very tense time that they're just there to make sure that in case that would happen, they were going to shut this down. They were going to make sure that life survives and that we don't nuke ourselves to oblivion. And I say that because, you know, the flap ends abruptly in 1977. And also that's when the Treaty of the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons between Russia and United States is ratified.
Right.
And yeah, the interest that UFOs show in nuclear weapon testing sites and nuclear weapon, you know, silos is not... this isn't just the only time that you kind of see that, or the in an area heightened UFO activity in an area with nuclear weapons. We do have the one case, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it was a pretty impactful event where the UFO, you know, they were testing out their missile silos and they were kind of arming the missiles and things like that, and a UFO appeared over the base. I think it was somewhere in the UK, and the UFO seemed to actually disable the nuclear weapons, like emitted some type of light, some type of beam, and seemed to disable those missile guidance systems. So there is some of that kind of lines up. Brayden's theory lines up, you know, or it could correlate with that.
Well, so that's what, like, you can theorize that that's what happened, but we don't have any fucking proof that that happened.
So it's the prime directive.
There's some Star Trek.
Some Star Trek. That's what I mean, though. But that's pretty much like,
so it's like you can't, well, you're
not supposed to interfere.
You can't directly interfere.
Yeah. So they're just stopping. They're stopping from like, if we were to blow ourselves up with nukes, the planet would be fine, but like, it would be really hard for organic life to continue as is. You like kind of shut down the whole ecosystem.
Well, so they might have some type of thing where it's either they would be like some type of caretaker role, or that would feel like to keep us from blowing ourselves up.
We're the science experiment, and they're just making sure that we continue on.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, here's another theory I have. Now that we've been talking about Beer Run, this popped into my head halfway through the show. We have all these nuclear silos in North Dakota, you know, their bases, and there's a lot of issues, sightings around airfield bases in Manitoba. What if this is some sort of advanced aircraft from the United States military? And it is, in fact, a Beer Run. And that was only named that such because it was like a hidden kind of thing known, but, you know, through the whispers of Manitoba, that maybe these military personnel would get in this advanced craft, fly over the border and land it in places, fucking with Canadians, and then go on a Beer Run while they were in Canada.
Well, we do know, like, after that, the one case file, we know that they had those fucking way advanced drones in the 70s, right? Like way ahead of their time.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Could this have been one of those?
Maybe.
Possibly.
Right? Well, and then doing test flights over Manitoba is perfect because it's not like Canada has the capabilities to shoot these things down. So it's perfect. So if you wanted to test like your surveillance drones, that would make so much fucking sense to drive it over Carmen, Manitoba, because outside of someone shooting a .22, you know, you could do tests. You could drive it by house. You could see what you could do with it without fear of losing it at all.
Because you can throw some lights on it for theatrics, have a good laugh at the Canadian shit in their pants.
No, man,
aliens.
That is the defense system of the UFO. Is the light itself make it so unrecognizable. They're like, that's no way that's a craft. And everyone's like, you guys all must be crazy. It's a glowing orb. Nah, it's not like invisible. It's because a lot of people say like, why do UFOs need the fucking lights? What's the point of the lights? Why do I need to be glowing through the sky?
And here's the thing. I know we didn't talk about it, but in the lake incident, it was reported that people, the five boys at the dock there saw windows wider than they were tall, but they saw windows on the craft. And my thing is like, well, why would a craft need windows? Why would some intergalactic spacecraft have windows? That seems weird to me.
It's an elaborate prank to get better beer.
Yeah.
By the neighbors down south.
Yeah.
That's a great prank.
Right. Too prideful to admit that's why it's mischievous sucks. And friendly, because they're hiding the truth in plain sight, right? It's right. Mischievous and friendly because it's the American soldiers just coming for beer.
So like there's a handful of people in on it, maybe like the beer store guy, like the convenience store man, and
yeah, he knows. He's like
someone at the local
Yeah.
Local landing strip or something. There are three or four people in on it.
That's only because like this is not one case that we went through. Would I classify this as mischievous or friendly?
No, not.
That's the furthest from my thoughts when I read these cases.
They're personifying this terrible UFO in a way that gives them hope that it's not sinister. They're like, yeah, it's just friendly. But deep down, they all know like, nah, this is.
Here's fucked. The thing. This is what I was thinking of too. I was like, and I, you know, I should have looked into this more. I didn't get into it. So hashtag look it up. How many unexplained missing persons are there in southern Manitoba from 1975 to 1977 that you couldn't attribute to this?
Are you saying that's taking people?
Maybe. Dude, it's taking horses.
32 horses. Right?
That's what I'm saying is like any unexplained disappearance in this time frame in that area, I'm going to say, I'm like, you can't say it wasn't Charlie.
All I'm saying is you don't have any fucking proof, all right?
Yeah, you can also say Charlie's a saint. You can't say it wasn't leprechauns. Like, yeah.
I think
that's true, Dan. Good point.
I think that would make a great sequel of the book.
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
Any other? What else do we think it is?
Yeah, it's a fucking
swamp gas weather balloon.
I was gonna say it's weather phenomenon. Is what I'm looking for. That's always the dismissive claim, especially if there's no continuous video evidence or like a clear picture. People just say like maybe there is an atmospheric phenomenon going on for that 6 months only. And it was, I don't know.
That's what I don't understand.
I can't figure out what it could be.
That sounds crazy.
That's what I don't understand with this whole case.
6 months located in that area.
And always comes this way over the hill.
Well, if you can fucking, if it's like clockwork and you see this thing on a nightly basis, everybody knows where it's fucking going. You telling me they couldn't get any better footage than what they have?
Dude, well, it's 1975.
Still.
And it's in Hicksville, Manitoba. Where's that fucking beautiful picture
that you have?
The residence of Carmen.
That fucking UFO that's flying over wherever on the island where you live that we can see that looks exactly like a fucking spaceship.
Saucer. Yeah, but that was shot in like 96.
Oh, was it 96? No, I don't know. But, I just like to think that there would be something better than what they have.
It's the nighttime. There is good cameras, but like night footage.
So nighttime is the right time unless you're trying to shoot pictures of fucking aliens.
Well, unless you have lighting to like light up a set, like it's hard to take a picture. I'm assuming back then the cameras were much less sensitive to low light.
So in there now.
So if you're pointing at a sky and there's an orange object, or like you wouldn't really get any like a clear picture because you just
don't have the fucking video though? Like that's the only video we had was the one we saw.
Yeah, but it's the same. The same low light quality.
Well, let's get into the only one. That's the only
Here's
one
the
we
big
have.
Issue. Here's the big issue with this whole case is the only information we have about Charlie Red Star at all comes from Grant Cameron.
And have you listened to the guy talk?
You hit the nail on the head on that one. If you're searching for Charlie Red Star, you want to know more about this UFO, it's really hard to get past the pages of just links to the book.
And you can't even talk to any of the witnesses because none of their names are their fucking real names in the book.
Grant Cameron himself, if you listen to interviews with him, he says he needed to get clearance of the people. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, the sister gave him this manuscript 30 years after he wrote it. And he's like, oh shit, I forgot I wrote this. To me, I'm like, how'd you forget you wrote a thing about these fucking UFOs that changed your life? I don't believe that for shit. Secondly, when the publisher goes, you need to get clearance, he just goes, well, most of them are dead, so I just made up all of the names. I changed and made up all the names.
And it wasn't even the fact that he didn't remember writing some of it. He didn't remember writing the whole thing.
Any of it.
He said in the interview that
he forgot writing this 200-page manuscript.
Maybe he was like fucking Stephen King and like loved coke and alcohol. Well, and
that's true.
Got super fucked up and wrote Cujo and forgot about it.
But he says he remembers just writing like a few like manuscripts and some like paragraphs. He does not remember writing the full thing.
Stephen King remembers writing all his books. He doesn't remember directing Maximum Overdrive, though.
Maximum Overdrive was fucking awesome.
And he doesn't remember directing it.
Definitely doesn't remember. And I read that somewhere. He fucking was too coked up and threw the book in the garbage, and his wife picked it up out of the garbage. I was like, why are you throwing this away?
If you wrote this book and the publisher's like, you got to get some clearance, like get some people's accounts on it, like get them to clear it. Not everyone is dead. Like that's bullshit. That's bullshit. He's just being lazy.
It's not that long
ago. And to me, and I'm like, instantly when you're being that lazy that you won't even go get one person to sign off on their account, it raises serious fucking questions for me. Because then right then I'm like, well, then there's no other published account anywhere of this. It's you are the only account. Right? So then right then I'm like, you know, the greatest Canadian UFO flap that no one's ever talked about. Right? Or ever reported, except you 30 years later and you changed everyone's names. I'm going to say right now, you fucking made those names up because he couldn't even keep his story straight. In the book, McCann just says the horses were scared. That's it. In the book, he doesn't mention anything about the fucking horses going missing. But in every interview that he talks about, he gets into this thing where he can't help but embellish the story. So he starts talking about the McCanns and their 32 missing horses. That wasn't, if that's such a big thing, mention it in the fucking book. Why would you leave it out of the book?
Yeah, it's it makes it tough when the only articles on the internet are based on the book and they're all within the last like year and a half.
Yeah, and the other issue I have with Grant Cameron is that any interview about Charlie Red Star, he immediately changes the subject to other works he's working on or other things he's talking about. Like any interview about Charlie Red Star, he instantly starts going off about Mount Shasta and some fucking UFO visitors there and some other shit going on. And like just he instantly gets off the topic of Charlie Red Star almost immediately, which really rubbed me the wrong way. And I hate to say it because I really liked a lot of these accounts. It's a really fun story. I don't believe a lick of this book. I don't believe Grant Cameron in the slightest. I think this is a book he wrote. I don't even think he wrote it in 1975 or 1976. I believe he wrote it probably within the last 10 years. And he's full of shit. That's my personal opinion. Is he? Maybe not. And I would hope that. But like, fucking just get one other person to sign off on their account. Give me one other person that's published their account. Like, it's crazy.
I will go on, you know, saying that he does. There are like two parts in the book where he does mention about the 32 horses going missing. He just says that the McCanns believe that someone either had stolen their horses, but they couldn't believe that 32 horses had just gone missing, you know, without a trace. And then he mentions that the pasture from which they disappeared, there are also Sasquatch sightings in that area, apparently. So, you know,
there must be lots of bushes with berries and boulders.
Here's the thing. Here's the other thing that really bugs me.
Brain's on a rant.
Yeah. Dude, well, these are things that bug me. Like Mothman, you goes to, where's that in Point Pleasant or whatever, Virginia? Point Pleasant.
Pennsylvania. Not everything's in Virginia. Pennsylvania.
Everything Pennsylvania. Funds in Virginia.
But they have like a Mothman, right? Like Mothman Festival. Like it's fucking Mothman this. You come to the Pacific Northwest, fucking Bigfoot everywhere, baby. We're exploiting the shit out of selling merch. Like Andrew said, this brings it back to what Andrew said. You look up Cameron, Manitoba, they don't give a fuck about Charlie Red Star. There's no Charlie Red Star Festival. They're not selling fucking you know, little keychains, nothing.
There's no Charlie.
There's no Carmen Manitoba band festival.
Charlie Red Star.
Hey, listen, they fucking closed Charlie Land down in the 70s. So,
yeah, all thanks to McCann.
Fucking McCann. What a McAsshole.
I would tend to agree with you. I like the story. I think it would make. I think there's a room for a great sequel, personally. And I want to know if anyone, there's some people that listen from Manitoba or Central. North Central United States, around that area, Dakota. If anyone has a grandpa or something in the area, ask him about Charlie Red Star. If someone, if you say Charlie Red Star and they're like, oh yeah, there was some. I just want to know like a news article of the time or something.
There's nothing.
Time. That's what I want.
Yeah, I try. You know, I definitely dug into this one, and the book was only kind of like solid information. Oh, solid. Quotations, solid information that I could find on the topic. I tried to look up, you know, archive news articles. I tried to look up the individual accounts that he put in the book, and I tried to source those, confirm those, and it's just like I couldn't find anything really besides the book and you know the military installations he mentions in the book. But other than that, it's really hard to find any mention of the Charlie Red Star UFO flap that went on for nearly 2 years. You know, people seeing chasing this red ball of light down the highway. I was like, I think that would be a thing.
Maybe he is. No, he's fabricating most of the story. But if someone goes there, like they keep all the old newspapers on, what do they call them? They like put them on those little digital cards and like
microfiche.
Yeah. No one's gone back to that news station. I don't know if they still exist or where the archives are. And maybe just no one's gone to that time and actually pulled them up because it's such a small town. No one's even put the effort in yet, but I don't know.
I don't know. I'd have to look up because the National Enquirer even looked into it. And I tried to find I don't know. I'd have to try and dig a little bit deeper into where the National Enquirer keeps their archives.
Yeah.
That would just be that. Actually, that's something I need to know. So maybe I will look into that. So look forward to a Charlie Red Star update at some point, I suppose. Yeah.
Part two.
Final thoughts, Charlie Red Star.
Well, you know what I mean. It's a case that has got no evidence. You know what I mean? I don't know. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? I was thinking like, you know what I mean? Like some joke here. It's overplayed. You know what I mean? Anyways, that's what I was thinking. I didn't really look into this. You know what I mean? I didn't really look into it very much. You know what I mean?
All right.
Thanks, Andrew. Zoe, what do you think?
I think that I need something more than just the book, even though I think the story is good and I think it makes for make a movie. Make this Charlie Red Star. Make it that girl. She's the alien and she's hiding this whole time. And that's the movie. Turns into this orb, starts scaring girls, earthquakes their fucking house and shit. It's a good movie. Let's get it made.
Dan, what do you think?
It's a fun book to read. Just wish there was more out there to find. Maybe there is. Maybe dig a little bit deeper, find something.
If you have a first-hand account or know someone who has a first-hand account, get them in touch with us. We want to know. Andrew, final thoughts. Charlie Red Star.
Fun, entertaining, but bullshit.
There you go.
I know what you mean. All right. So, you know my thoughts on it. I think it's bullshit as well. Why don't we get into a little space news? I thought this article was interesting to read. I sent to you guys. Entire cities could fit inside the moon's monstrous lava tubes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Two things. I didn't know the moon had any tubes of any kind.
Well, I know.
Secondly, I didn't know they had any lava. The moon had lava?
We talked about
unbelievable.
We talked about that they think the volcanic activity on the moon was greater than they initially thought. And then this article confirms that lava tubes on the moon. I don't know has anyone been in a lava tube, like in a tour or anything?
No.
Fuck that.
Oh, man. It's pretty.
No, I don't think so.
It's pretty cool. Like you can see where like it's where the lava like melted through softer rock and left like the granite around and it's all like crystallized. But on Earth, they only get so big. Like, I think they get like maybe a couple hundred feet wide and tall because of the gravity and like the mass. But on the moon, they're saying these fucking moon tunnels can be so big you could fit entire small cities inside these lava tubes because the moon's less dense and the gravity's less. And so these, I guess they're saying these caverns can form that are like 1,500 times the size of what can form on Earth. So that's where the fucking alien bases are. They're in the moon in the caverns.
Well, and that's what they're saying is that these caverns could be future sites of human bases.
It makes sense because you're shielded.
Or they are current sites of alien bases.
Or current sites of human bases in the secret space program with Corey Good and the boys.
Yeah.
Still waiting for the proof of the age regression, but
okay. I had, they are starting to put together Lucy. The NASA asteroid mission Lucy begins spacecraft assembly before 2021 launch. So this is going to go out, I think it's past Jupiter. They're going to look at all the space rocks out there and they're looking for water. They're seeing what's looking at these never before seen Trojan asteroids. And they're just starting to put the spacecraft together.
So are they going to bring one of these asteroids back and then own the planet?
I don't think so. I think they're just scanning it. You know, they're just going to look, try to figure out what they're made of.
For the next mission to go capture them and bring them back to Earth to reap the benefits of the rare minerals.
Oh, yeah.
Called it. 100%. 2031.
I like this one. A galaxy far, far away looks like a TIE fighter, astronomers discover unexpectedly. I'm like, I guess if you squint through your eyelashes and then someone says TIE fighter, you're like, yeah, and you twist it to look a certain way. You're like, okay, maybe.
It has like one tiny, it's like a TIE fighter with a broken wing.
Yeah, but it's a TXS zero.
Like a TIE interceptor. But
yeah, it's got the curved wings like intercept, like the interceptor. Yeah.
Probably.
TXS 0128 plus 554. They've known for a few years. NASA scientists have basically recently done a deep dive. And then they realized, oh my God, it's Darth Vader's ship. And they made a big news conference about it. Well, this one article. Interesting, but like I was like, eh. I was like, I guess so, but it's a stretch.
You got to write some fun articles in the space news websites and magazines.
Sometimes it's a slow day in space.
Slow days.
It is. Thank you. It's not a slow day for SpaceX, as they are going to attempt 3 rocket launches Sunday. Move over, monster trucks. Sunday is now space day. They're going to launch 2 back-to-back Falcon 9 launches in Florida and a Starship test flight in Texas. Elon Musk was like, there's a good chance something's going to fuck up, but... Well, Sunday's going to be intense.
Good Sunday.
Something will
stay
slip.
Tuned.
But yeah, Sunday
slip,
is intense.
Slip.
So they're going to launch a Starlink and a Salcom 1B. They'll be live streamed. So stay tuned.
Looking for something to watch on TV lately. Watch some launches.
We got 3 possible. So there's a good chance we might get 1 at least. Chances are we might get 0 on Sunday.
If there's 1% chance of lightning, then they cancel it. So you never know.
Did you have any other space news? Anyone else have any space news?
Nope, those are the main ones.
That's all you got
this week.
How are we for time? This one's run a little long. Why don't we get right into Patreons? Let's get the theorite of the week.
Philly on Discord from our private Discord server. Someone explain it. This thing's fucking great. I'm going to pull it up.
He did a picture of an alternate reality where 4 aliens start a podcast called Human Theorists Theorizing. And it's basically the 4 of us in alien form. It's hilarious. It's spectacular.
Fucking awesome.
We'll post it on our Instagram. He gave us permission. We'll do that tomorrow. Thanks, Philly.
We have a surprisingly amount of spectacularly talented people.
Yeah, it's crazy. Way more talented
than us.
Ridiculous.
It was just like, I saw that pop up in the art channel, and I was like, holy shit, that's fucking rad. I was like, that is cool.
I want to talk to you guys about something we can do with that in a bonus episode or something after hours.
Okay. But Philly, thanks, Philly. You're the theory of the week.
Yeah, it's so good.
That's fucking sweet.
If you want to be theory of the week, just if you can submit something to any of our socials, Discord, email, alientheorists@gmail.com, that we can post to social media and give you credit for.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be like, don't think like Philly is an unbelievable artist, and when you see this, you're going to be like, I'll never be theorite of the week. Well, you can be. Because even if you post something funny where you roast us or you something clever, witty where we can use it, we have a good laugh.
I think memes are
you just gotta
acceptable.
Make, you got to make us laugh, and it's got to stand out to us. I mean, we're getting to the point now where we get lots of stuff in. Most of it's gold, but every now and then, you know, the cream rises to the top. And there's some fucking gold.
As the Macho Man Randy Savage says.
Yeah, as a Macho Man says. But there's some gold out there, and you just got to make sure what you're sending. It's just got to make us have a good laugh.
Yeah, that's it.
You'll be theater of the week.
Make us laugh. If you're not supporting the show on Patreon, head over to patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast and get yourself a whole bunch of bonus goodies. And then join us after the normal recordings for a little after hours. This week we got James Barnett, Crystal Kegel, Jamie Went Up, Chris Moreno, Admiral Akbar.
It's a trap.
It's not Admiral. I added that for you.
Oh.
Right, that's all good. Monique Ponce, Candace Clemens, Keenan Simpson, Edward Doherty, Cody Dixon, and Tony Robinson. Thank you very much for supporting the show this week. If you haven't figured out how to get onto our Discord, just ask and we'll send you the link. It should automatically happen, but if not, let us know.
And check out our new store on TeePublic. Pump that shit.
Yes.
Finally.
But here's the thing. We had tons of issues with Streamlabs recently with COVID. We've switched back to TeePublic, but here's the thing. You want to help your boys out and get some sweet-ass merch? TeePublic gives us the ability to add way more designs, and then you get to pick what clothes and shit they're on. But if you just search Alien Theorists on TeePublic, you're going to find us and you're going to buy merch from us, but you're going to give more money to TeePublic than to us.
Yep.
So you need to go www.teepublic.com/ REF underscore ID equals 13961. Or easier, go to any of our social media pages and find the link there. It helps us get a little more money. You give us a little more money than T Public.
They do not make it easy, do they? That's fucking ridiculous. You could have
just said, go to our social medias and click on the link. It's don't funnier use to, anything else.
It's funnier no, to I'm say that give you whole the exact, link.
If you, go give yeah. you the whole link.
I like that. I like the enthusiasm on the link. You could just go to Instagram. Go to the,
they're going to go back. I have to go back and listen to it.
If you did it the long way, show us a video of you doing it the long way and...
We'll send you a discount code.
I like that.
Something, I don't know. We'll do something.
We're not.
Anyways,
can't do that.
It's on our website too, alientheorist.com. Easy to find. You don't have to type in the full 37-digit address.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
Easy, buddy.
Hey everyone, did you know, according to the sacred text bound in human flesh known as the Necronomicon, that our Dark Lord Cthulhu rests in his sunken city of Rillia on a giant pile of money? Well, if you don't want to see the world devolve into a black abyss of gibbery madness, or you just want to support our show, go ahead and head over to Patreon.
You can find that at patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast, or head over to alientheoristtheorizing.live where you can suppress the Dark Lord by buying our merch. Or really stick it to him by leaving us a 5-star review and subscribing.
Thanks a lot. And Fiknui Mlknafa Cthulhu Rilia Wagnagel Fatagan.
Wagnagel Fatagan to you too, Dan.